Well, thank you so much for coming. So I'm Alex Jarrett, and I'll be talking about sharing and cooperation and busyness, but instead, I guess, looking at what's the opposite side of busyness, so I guess not being busy or having more space in one's life, and about creating non-traditional family, and kind of especially how all those things fit together to our, you know, that they can help create, they complement each other. And so the notes at the top of the things to remember are show feelings, rant if I want to, which is very unlikely for me. but I'll try. And show the hard parts too. Don't try to make it a polished and perfect thing. So, to be myself. And so there'll be time for questions at the end. And I want to start with a story about my friend Adelaide and her family. They're here today. It's very exciting. And especially about the story of us building a bike trailer to go to Antarctica together. But before I talk about that, I'll tell some of the background of building those relationships. So I've been friends with her parents for a long time. And one of the things that I would do a lot was just to come by unannounced and just see if it was a good time to hang out or talk or not. And this was before she was born. So it was a little bit awkward to do that, to say, okay, I'm just going to show up at your house. And we were friends, but it's still, these days you're supposed to call or text or something. So I would just show up and kind of felt like, and I tried to do that a bunch in my life in different places. And even if sometimes it was awkward, I just felt like that, like people would be left with that feeling that they were wanted or that you wanted them, that you wanted that friendship. And even if sometimes they were like, this isn't a good time. So I feel like that helped to build something there. And then when Adelaide was born, they asked me to be someone who would be a male presence in her life and be Uncle Alex, which was something that I've been wanting more connection with children and couldn't quite. I had some connections with children. I had thought about having my own children, but wasn't in a relationship that was going to happen, and knew that I wanted like a lot of connection and regular, like ongoing deep connection with children. I was trying to figure out how to do that, and so. This is the point where I blank out and can't talk about anything. trying to figure that out, and so I would babysit and I would hang out a lot, and still then that was the point where they really needed a lot of help with things, and so I would show up and try to and play and just start washing dishes, and without being asked, because I've found that parents usually, it's really hard for them to ask for help. There's something about the culture, the way the culture is now, that you just actually have to show up and start doing things and not wait for that ask to help. And kind of not wait for that ask to help around having the relationship. That I get the sense that there's such a feeling of, oh, we don't want to obligate you. We don't want you to go out of your way. But my feeling is that it doesn't feel like the obligation or going out of my way, because I feel like a part of that family, and that's grown over time, and it feels even so being included in a family, it just feels like this is what you do. You are you are an uncle, even if it's adopted. So about 3 years ago, Adelaide and I, when Adelaide was two, we started spending a day, a week together. And in the beginning, it was pretty hard to keep my, like, I could play for a couple of hours, and then I would kind of get really tired and kind of lose my attention. And sometimes I would be able to arrange it so that, okay, you're set up with this this activity for a little bit, and then I can take a nap on the couch. Kind of forget about the child taking a nap. It was, you know, I needed the nap. And but you always have to have one, as parents know, you have to have like one ear open at all times to make sure nothing's going to go wrong. So we did all sorts of really fun adventures together, playing and wrestling and taking the city bus to places and going on hiking adventures and visiting many of you in the audience. And about after a year and a half, there was something that really shifted in my ability to just feel close and connected. I mean, it's definitely like I felt a lot of love before, but something really shifted and it just felt like this really solid connection. And I kind of feel like crying a little bit thinking about that. And just having, I guess, knowing that I was really wanted and loved, but just really wanting and loving Adelaide, and just sort of entering, and so just so that it took that long of being consistent to develop that relationship. That's hard, but don't, you know, that I didn't give up on that, and that felt really important to me. So now we can get to the building the bike trailer to Antarctica section. And there's a picture of it over there you can look at later. So Adelaide has a dream of going to Antarctica, and I do too. So we read some books about Antarctica, and we learned about it, and we thought, well, how are we going to get there? So we decided, well, let's try to build some sort of house that something we can sleep in as we travel to get there. And, you know, it might not get us all the way there. We'll definitely have to take a boat at some point, but maybe we can put some pontoons on and go down the Connecticut River. And it was like, I felt like it really wasn't my place to impose an adult's idea of what's possible or what can happen in a particular time frame. I felt like it was my place to just follow her lead and figure it out as we went. And so we started building this trailer, and it took months and months to build this trailer. And I definitely would have given up if Adelaide hadn't, like, every week that I showed up, almost every week, I would say, what are we doing today? And she would be like, we're going to your house and we're building the trailer to go to Antarctica. And so we would go up to my house and we would like start bolting these aluminum I-beams together that were part of an old swimming pool. But I need to say that this was also one of my dreams, was to build kind of like a bike RV or something that you could tow behind but would also be like a little house. And so basically I got to follow her lead and do something that I loved and something that pushed me. And that seemed like just the perfect meeting of multiple people's needs. So that's kind of whenever I'm being with a child, I'm trying to think that way, as like, what can we do that lets her lead and I get to do things that I love? Yeah, so we would get together and work on learning, like, how do we bolt this thing together? How do we make sure it structurally works? How do we figure out how to make a roof and wheels? And so months and months, and Adelaide had more commitment to it than me, and I just kept going with it. So, yeah, I guess that's the story of that, and it's stored away from the winter, but we're going to continue, and then in the spring we're going to do some test rides to East Hampton, and we'll see how far we get. So now I want to just say a couple things about this talk, and that I'll be speaking from my experience, and not trying to say these particular things will work for you. That, you know, I've had a lot of privilege to figure out, to have the space to figure out different ways of doing things and try different ways of living. And I feel like, so there's this history of cooperation, and it feels like much has been lost in our current culture, or at least in my culture of like white middle class culture, that there's this ideas that you have to do things alone. And that's one of the sort of the core, the key ideas that I keep coming back to, is you never have to do anything alone again. And that there's like many people right in this part of the world and internationally, a lot of like raised poor and working class people and people of color who have not lost a lot of ways of sharing and cooperation and figuring out how to meet multiple needs. And so I have so much to learn from people that are right around me. So learning how to get along with each other is a skill that pays off in many ways. So financially, for sure, and socially. And another theme is to expect difficulty when you're doing something that's outside of just the sort of the standard way of doing things. Running into conflict does not mean you're failing. It's not inherently bad to have a conflict. It's actually going to happen. And if you expect that, you're more prepared to be able to say, you know, that, oh, this hard thing is happening. I was expecting this to happen, actually. And that you're better able to say, to be in that situation. So one of the ways that I've shared things is that four of us have bought a two-family house together 10 years ago now. But before we bought that house, we spent about 2 years with a group of people, not the group that it eventually came, but a whole bunch of different people, figuring out how this might work. And so we thought, oh, we'll buy some land and we'll build houses on it, do like a land trust thing, or so lots of different incarnations sort of came about. And then finally, other people split off, and many of those people figured out how to buy their own houses and live in community in other ways. But we came down to this group of the four of us, and in some ways, like our lifestyles are different, in that we have different ideas about resources. And but we said, well, let's try that. Let's look at houses. Let's see if there's something that might work for us. And so we found a house and got an offer accepted on it. And we just pooled our income all together and managed to qualify for a mortgage together. Our incomes were not very high, but our credit was good. So we were able to they just added up the income. And so we brought up all these things of like, what's the worst case scenario that could happen? What if someone dies or breaks up, or we just can't resolve conflicts together? What if we want people to camp in the yard for weeks at a time and they don't, or something, you know, things like that. And so we came up with this document, and but we also knew it was really about the relationships and just deciding to trust each other and building that. So it's so much cheaper to buy a two-family house and share it, generally, in terms of like the actual amount of square footage that you get. So, you know, the whole house was $300,000, so we split that, and that gave us each, like with some work, a three-bedroom apartment for $150,000 with lots of land, about 0.4 acres. And so that's really hard to find in Northampton if you don't share. So that was our first immediate economic benefit. And we got to work on the house maintenance together. It really felt like there wasn't, you know, I didn't feel this burden of, you know, that I am responsible ultimately for everything that's going on here. Like, let's ask this other person. And there are also some conflicts. I think one of the conflicts was about when some of us wanted to build an addition to the house, and others of us felt, just had all these feelings about it, these feelings about resource use and land shrinking, you know, like taking up some of the yard space and the noise. And we came and we talked about it, and it was hard. It was like this sort of like just difficult, like, I don't like this, and, you know, but I want this. And we talked it out, and we figured out how to make it work for us. And now it's this amazing community space that's just feels like it's a beautiful space, and that we go over next door all the time and watch movies and hang out and vice versa. And so, you know, it's done, and we got through that challenge. So there's the two family house, and then within our unit, we live cooperatively. So there's four or five of us in the other unit, and so this also saves a whole lot of money, because that's about $5,000 a year for each person who lives with us. Although that's necessary in the sense that, like, we wouldn't have been able to afford to live in Northampton and have a house without that. But there's also all these other ways, which are, I guess, are economic ways, but also social ways. So sharing meals, each of us cooks a meal once a week for the house, and we buy all the bulk food together and share most of our food. We gather wood. We got put in a wood stove a few years ago, and we gather wood from the neighborhood. There's a photo of that too. And we go collect it by bike trailer and then saw it with a two-person saw, and then split it. So it's all by hand. And I would not recommend trying to do that if you tried to do that by yourself. Because, I mean, maybe some people would be really excited about that. It's like, I just want to... Well, you can't do a two-person saw by yourself, really. You can get one person, but then it's so much more work. Or lifting 300 pounds of log. I mean, it's hard. But when you do it with your friends and you do it together, it brings this whole social connection to that work. And the sawing, and is just like every time you're sawing, you're talking the whole time and having that time together. And you're also saving, I mean, we save, I think about $1,000 a year. And we get a lot of exercise in a way, like I do a lot of biking, but don't get a lot of upper body exercise. So all those things together are this complement that makes things, it gives like this big benefit. And then there's all the times that the relationship I find with housemates who specifically want to talk to each other, like want to be present with each other. You get all these random times of talking to each other and interacting. And there's just a really cool benefit to that. Yeah, I guess I want to say how. So my experience with choosing people to share things with, and that it can't just be for economic reasons that people want to share. They also want to be there. They need to be willing to talk about problems. They want to have that social connection. So I guess that in some ways that excludes a whole bunch of people, but doing things cooperatively is kind of feels on an edge that you have to find a little bit of something to kind of grasp at that edge and pull people in. They have to find sort of these basic things that people are willing to do. So another thing about sharing housing directly that I've found is trying to find this balance between making really clear written agreements and then just having things be flexible and building like a cooperative culture. So you know, we have like not a legal set of agreements, but a list of things such as willingness to talk out problems, willingness to have house meetings, having regular meals, nonviolence. This is a sort of basic list of things, and also including how do you kick someone out of the house. Because I've seen a lot of people in shared housing situations where things start to go wrong. You've talked about a lot of things, and you say, oh, it would be great if we did this and this. And then one person says, I'm not going to do those things anymore. But there actually isn't a clear agreement about, well, then you're the person who should leave and find a new place to live. Instead, the houses just kind of go down to the lowest common denominator of cooperation. And it sours people on that. So having agreements, talking about things, expecting things to be difficult. And I don't want to overemphasize the difficulty either, because it's also so great to be living with people and having that connection every day. Oh, I wanted to mention also that a couple of us are starting a cooperative house network. It's a network we're trying to figure out, well, how many people are living cooperatively in the Valley, and who wants to. How can we help build more cooperative houses, from just information sharing to doing stuff together, like having collective economy together, to building equity so that people can own their own homes and live cooperatively. So the last piece about that I wanted to say was about sharing our private space with the public. And so our house is on the bike path in Florence. And when we first got it, there was a fence between us and the bike path. And one of the first things we did was to take down that fence, or part of the fence, and put a bench out there for people to sit at, and put a sign that said, please seat yourself, in multiple languages. There's many pictures over there. And then eventually we replaced just a wooden bench with this cob bench, which is made out of clay and sand and straw, and a cover so people could be out of the rain, and also like a free air pump and a free phone for people to use, all sorts of things to try to engage and open, like engage with the community that's going by and make connections with people. And so, you know, it was really easy to meet people because you could just sit outside on the bench and they would stop and talk to you about it. And so it was this great way to connect that way. And it also had difficulty. Like, you know, more than 99% of the people were really like respectful and excited about that being there. But then also there are these times when people would smash the bottles that we had embedded into the bench, or carve names into the bench, or do graffiti. The one great graffiti is someone wrote, I hate hippies, on our fence. And when we thought about it for a little while, we were like, it's really easy to change the word hate to share, because you just have to add an S and like sort of draw another line here. So then for a while it said, I share hippies, and then which was funny. And then the hippies kind of faded away, so then it just says, I share. So it's kind of taking that negative energy and trying to figure, well, how can we remake what that came in? And I think, again, you have to kind of expect that. Like, I think one of the people who was involved in making the bench, it was kind of like the last straw for her in terms of doing public art, doing public things, giving things, that the bench got wrecked in some ways. I mean, we kept repairing it. And that's unfortunate, because I feel like I need to expect that to happen and to say, this is actually just someone showing their struggle here. This is someone, there are a lot of reasons why people might be mad at private property, at us having the privilege of having this land. And in most cases, you cut people off, but here you're inviting them in and I don't really know what struggles they were showing when they were vandalizing, but it's, I think, much better to see it that way, to look at it that way, and to say, well, how can I build a relationship with people who might be damaging things? Because it's harder for someone to damage your things when you care, when you know them and care about them. And then another thing that's happened is that groups of young people, teenagers and a little younger, will come into our yard, like not even the edge, but into our yard and play on the swings and make tons of noise. It's so loud sometimes. And it's can be pretty annoying sometimes. And we did invite, we do check in with them, and one, you know, usually like it's one person who has, we know, and then they've invited their friends. And but it's also, I love it at the same time, and I love that they get to have this safe place to come and just be wild, because that's needed, because there aren't those places. So I want to talk a little bit about Pedal People, because that's also been a place. So Pedal People is a business that picks up trash and recycling and compost by bicycle in Northampton, and it's been around for 13 years, and it's a worker cooperative in that we all own, except for some people who are very occasionally do sub work, we all do the we all own the business together after a year apprenticeship. And so one of the key things that the way it's structured so that we can work as much or as little as we want to within some limits. The little is like 4 hours a week, and the as much is when we see someone like doing so much work that they're hurting themselves, we try to rein them back in. So that's basically enabled me to be able to adjust my hours of work. Like, so as I'm able to save money in various ways, then I can go down on my hours of work and have extra time to do other things and not be busy. And that, and just the support of having the, of not having a boss, of figuring out how to collectively manage ourselves, and, you know, having me feeling supported by this group of people who are doing this difficult thing, but feeling like, well, if we're doing this to ourselves, I guess, if we're, you know, at least no one is telling us what to do, and that's gives so much freedom in my heart, I guess, to say, to feel controlled. So that's been very important. And let's see. Hi. I just thought I'd take a second and notice you all instead of just talking. I'm pretty nervous. This talk itself has been something that I felt like I thought when a friend proposed it to me, and he proposed it as, you should do a talk and then you should do a world, this is the first talk of your world speaking tour. And so I thought it was an absolutely terrible idea, and that this should, you know, just the worst idea ever. So it's really like pushed me to be able to talk in front of a group of people. And I think an important thing is to admit to being nervous, to admit to being, to feeling like I'm, you know, I have these feelings of, oh, no one will want to listen to you, what you have to say isn't important. And then to have other people saying that, yes, you should do this. And people who, the idea is people who champion you, people who say, who just decide to support you and push you, but with love, and that we all need people to champion us. And it's hard to assess myself. It's kind of hard to assess, well, what kind of challenge should I take on? And I feel like you know, I need external support to be able to move on things. I'll say a little more about that in a minute, but I want to finish up talking about busyness. So the biggest way, I guess, I've been able to figure out being less busy is needing less money through sharing of resources is a big thing, and then being able to work less, meeting my needs in multiple ways, having that extra time. But even that, so once you actually have, say you have a day a week that you've carved out, there's an immediate pressure to fill it. You have to decide to just not do things. And then that brings up, for me, all these feelings of, do I deserve to have to be happy? Do I deserve to, you know, not do something? What about all the privilege that I have? So coming to that conclusion that, yes, it's okay to be well-rested, to have time for the things that I love, and I should use some of that time to just be happy and do things that I love, but I also need to use that privilege and time to make change in the world, and that is a benefit to me as well as anyone else that I'm going to, you know, any kind of oppression I'm going to counter. And so that has just definitely been evidenced by the family connections that I've had. It's something where I feel so loved and connected, and I'm also helping out and saving people a lot of money. And then just remembering that responsibility, that basically making space in my life has helped me to have room to take action in the world. And that it's not a selfish thing, or it is a selfish thing, but it's a selfish thing that is also, you know, has important impacts. I haven't talked about walking yet, and I only really have about 4 minutes left, but so I'll just say I have this vision of Northampton walking culture, where people and families are able to have the time to walk places, walk through the woods to get to places, sing songs and just talk about things the whole time and meet each other. And so I've been trying to just do that myself by walking, which for me, walking has really, it feels like such a healthy thing to do in both my body and my mind. And then it like calm allows me to think in a way that I won't if I'm rushing around. Although you can rush by walking too. Don't recommend that. And together, yeah, with bicycling and public transit, kind of fulfilling, it's again, it's a way of like fulfilling multiple needs for exercise, for space, or for social connection, and like seeing, meeting people on the bus that you would never meet otherwise. Oh yeah, one last piece of support that I've really used to be able to change myself is doing co-counseling sessions, which are just simply, the basic form is taking turns listening to each other and having space for your feelings. So that structure has really helped too, because, you know, I'll decide to do something that is frightening or difficult, and then I'll have that space to be able to just, you know, freak out of all those feelings, but then keep moving. Oh yeah, and then the last thing is about championing people and supporting them. And it would be really nice if all of us had someone or multiple people who decided to champion them. But probably you are going to have to decide to champion someone else first, and then maybe they can give that back to you or give that to someone else. So an encouragement to take action on doing that for someone else. I'm thinking about what space can I, how can I help someone else to make space in their life, and then what can I encourage them to do to challenge themselves. So I'm sure I've forgotten many things, but I think that's the end for now. And we're going to do a little activity for a few minutes. Break into pairs, or turn to, you know, to the person or people next to you, and just, well, 6 minutes to just talk about things that you heard and think about, like, what changes might you want to make in your life, and just make sure that each person gets a chance to share. Are there any questions?
Alex, you talked about sort of overcoming challenges in the sharing the house a little bit. I was curious if there are any examples of challenges in building panel people.
Yeah.
Worker co-ops in general.
Right, yeah. There definitely have been a lot of challenges. There have been a number where there have been where people have had a lot of personal issues with each other. And in Pedal People, we have something we call the CLC, which stands for the Collective Lubrication Committee. And so that's basically a committee that anyone can talk to the people on that about problems that they're having with someone else and potentially have them mediate issues or try to come up with resolutions for that. So when people have had, like, personal issues, then that's been really useful. There have been times where, remember, there was one where we wanted to restructure all of, like, how we did all of our routes, and there was a lot of resistance to that. So we have meetings every month, and we mainly strive to make decisions by consensus, but we potentially have a ability to do a, like, two-thirds majority if things really aren't working. So I think a big thing has been taking the time to not be rushed to make decisions, to make sure that there's, one, enough time to talk about it and that everyone gets listened to, and then to find places, okay, this is where we agree and this is where we don't, and then taking that time, if we possibly can, to wait till the next month, and in the meantime, those people trying to work out differences. So not being in a rush and trying to include everyone's thoughts have been key things.
I'm really impressed by how you stick through so many challenges in community and in many areas of community life. And I want to know, like, how you keep inspired to stick through it.
Just people, really, like, loving people and having a place to rant. I know I didn't really do any ranting today, unfortunately, but having a place to people to talk to in confidence where I can just show, like, this is really annoying and kind of get that out. And then talking to them kind of after I've gotten that out, so I'm a little calmer about it.
I'm so glad that I got to hear you. And I have this sort of life dream of creating something along the lines of what you talked about. But so I'm differently abled. I like that word better than this person. And a couple of years ago, I lucked into a roommate on Craigslist who also is differently abled. And living together for a year, we discovered that we were both way more higher functioning than apart because it was a space where we could ask for help with things that other people would think was totally weird that we needed help with. And it was like a culture of all that being totally okay. And then we didn't live together for a year and each went through relative either minor or major meltdown states. And then now we live together again. But my dream is to create a living space of all people who are differently abled in some way, because it kind of works in this magic way where one person is really good at this thing and can fill the gap for everybody has all different abilities.
Yeah.
But, so if anyone has any interest in talking about any of that, I want to do that with
Great.
You.
Great. Cool. Thanks, everyone.